And welcome back. It is your shining light in times of extreme darkness. That's right, is the parish of the Patriots. I am glad you have found us or joined us once again, whichever the case may be. It's a 103rd installment, man. Time just flies. We just keep trucking along. I really am glad you joined us. Of course, I'd really also appreciate those who financially support the show. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. You can find that information at the bottom of the page. We got snail mail. We got Bitcoin. There is a Monero. Should be a Monero address down there now. And, of course, our email, parishofthepatriots@protonmail.com. I highly suggest you write that down. Even if you don't plan to email anytime soon, it's fine. Write that down. In these dark days of shutdowns, they are attempting to scatter everybody. I mean, we're seeing this thing now, and we're going to get into this, of course, as we go along through our show. But, yeah, the dark days are here. They're shutting people down. They're scattering people. They're trying to criminally prosecute people for memes and jokes from 5 years ago. We're literally here, folks. So, just my feeling, I don't know how long they'll allow this network to remain unscathed. I'm not trying to be alarmist or feed you black pills, but I mean, we have to deal with reality. So you might jot the email down so we can stay in contact just in case. Doesn't hurt to always be prepared. So anyway, yeah, we've got, nothing changes. We've got a lot to talk about, lots of things happening, and the times remain interesting. So let's get going here. As always, we like to start off going through our listener supporter mailbag. Jackie, good to hear from Jackie again. Hi, Grandpa. Keeping it short, as I'm behind on everything, can't think of anything of interest to write about. Hope all is well. Well as it can be. I mean, we are in the middle of the deadliest virus ever known to man. The new black plague that seems a whole lot like the flu. But it is. It's definitely definitely a dangerous pandemic. So many people are just dropping like flies. It's, of course, the overall death numbers haven't changed any, but never mind that. It's a deadly pandemic. It's just, it's like their attention. I've come to the conclusion that there's no escaping the fact that they are intentionally destroying the economy. I mean, like the last of it, the last little bit, the energy sector. Now they're working to destroy that. And some are still out there stuck with this mentality. Well, they're just naive. They think they're saving the planet. No, they don't. I mean, like, yeah, the fools out there marching in the street in Sweden or wherever the hell. I mean, they may think that, but the people that push the agenda, push the narrative, they don't think that. They don't care about any of that shit. So now they're intentionally between this deadliest virus ever known to man, with apparently the same overall death numbers as seasonal flu. And now they're shutting down the energy sector. I mean, they are literally torpedoing the economy on purpose. And I don't get, it may be shocking, but I don't get invited to their meetings, so I can't give you the overall plan. But some sort of weird global reset thing, to where they convince everybody that being a complete and literal slave is just going to be the absolute bomb. You're going to love it. Dan, tithes for the month of February. Really like all parts of the show. Especially important to me at this time of my life is the Christian message. And I do appreciate that, Bill. Really does mean a lot. I can't tell you how, it can get discouraging. It can get discouraging, and to hear this feedback and to know that y'all really are getting something out of it means a whole lot. Mr. T, week in, week out, weekly supporter, tithe for the parish is appreciated, and a special shout out for Mr. T. I don't want to say, I hope you get to feeling better, I guess, but I know the circumstances. It's tough hanging there. It's just yet another one of those trials in life, my friend. And finally, from Brian, it's been amazing how God keeps sending people along to do things at just the right time in my life. Hope this finds you well and surviving the dreaded COVID in style. That is from Brian. Appreciate it. And yes, I read the rest of it. It's very specific to you. So I chose not to read that on the air. I do my best to protect all of you. Your anonymity, although we don't know how much of that is even left now in clown society. So yeah, I hope all the rest of it continues to chug along great for you. And it's a great example here. I was speaking to somebody IRL just yesterday. I'm recording this show on Saturday this week. was talking to somebody yesterday who's looking at this torpedoing of the economy, not knowing this uncertainty, and, you know, really honestly pretty blackpilled about this. And, you know, I told him, I said, you know, at the end of the day, we have very little, if no, control over these overall big events. I mean, we just don't. So at the end of the day, you try to keep the wheels moving. You try to keep just moving forward in your life. And you just sit there and say, well, it's all over. It's all over. I just can't do anything. It's all, we're doomed, doomed, doomed. If the doom virus doesn't get us, then, you know, we're going to wind up in a camp. And that very well may be true. At least the camp part is much more likely than the doom virus. But at the end of the day, you still have to live your life. Don't ever forget that. You've got to keep living your life. Find some happiness where you can find it. I'm just sitting here thinking, it just flashed into my mind as that rolled off my tongue here. You know, how they try to portray us as these evil haters that, you know, spreading the hatreds. And I mean, here we are, you know, just find some happiness in your life. You know, this, yes, what a message of hatred. Yeah, find some happiness in your life. Keep moving forward. Just as Brian pointed out, you know, so often you'll find that God will just kind of keep things just falling into place for you if you keep moving. But if you stop moving, you know, he's not going to grab you and shove you forward necessarily. I mean, I don't know. I guess he could do that. But generally speaking, the way it works is you got to keep doing, you know, taking that next step. It doesn't matter. It gets discouraging. You can't see step two or three. And in fact, after the next step, you have no idea what comes next or how you can even make that work. But if you go on and take that step, then so often God will put something in the place. I believe there's a Christian believer. Obviously, if you're a non-believer, still tuning in the show, we have quite a few of those too, and that's all cool. But as a Christian believer, this has been my experience. I'm not just trying to give you some hopium here. As my personal experience, if you will go ahead and make yourself take that next step, so often, boom, something else will fall into place. And you know, once again, it's like, well, yeah, but what after that? Well, I don't know, but if you will go on and take that step, then you wait around, then boom, something else comes into play, and it just, you keep moving forward. The point is, you got to keep the wheels moving, you got to keep the gears turning in your life. You can't just stop. You can't stop living. Yes, it's dark times, and they're going to get darker. I'm not going to lie to you, but you got to keep things moving forward. You got to keep, like I say, you got to keep them big wheels moving. You got to keep them big wheels turning. You got to keep the gears moving and keep moving on with your life. I mean, that's all we can do. Anyway, that wraps up Listener Supporter Mailbag. Very much appreciated again. If you've never supported the show, I highly encourage you to do so. I can't sit here and promise you a special blessing that God's going to get you a house or some shit like people on TV do. But I could tell you that I'll really appreciate it. And, you know, just a few bucks a month will, you know, makes a difference for me. You know, we don't get extravagant lifestyles like those who are officially approved. It does. It chaps me. Anytime I'm stuck in the vehicle with somebody that has like AM talk radio on, and I listen to the crap these guys are putting out, and I'm like, myself or anybody, any of the other hosts for that matter on this network, Sven Longshakes, Dr. Johnson, you know, not boastful here or anything, but just analytically speaking, we put out better content than anything that's on AM talk radio. And those guys get paid millions of dollars. And, you know, we're here just, somebody sends us $5 a month. You know, we're really appreciative of it. And those who send more, we really appreciate that too. And, you know, just trying to get by on a shoestring. But that's the way it is. That's the way it is when you're on the side of truth. Well, yeah, the insanity continues. If you missed it, past Friday installment of Clown World in Review, Daily Nationalist, Sven Longshanks and I, we discussed this whole indictment and arrest and charges being made against Vicky Vaughn. Ricky Vaughn. You remember Ricky Vaughn from back in the day, back in when, you know, we were allowed on Twitter. And we covered that, you know, in the context of, you know, in the time frame that we had to do that show. But we're going to kind of expand on that and expand on a few other things, I think, as we keep rocking on, because it's just really hit you in the feels, you know. I mean, first off, I'd forgotten all about the Ricky Vaughn, you know, basically character. I mean, so much of what we did back then, you know, it was like character portrayal on the internet. You know, I mean, you filled these roles and it was fun. It was a fun time. It really was. The meme wars were brutal, but the meme wars were also a lot of fun and managed to get Trump elected, which just really sent the whole entire system into meltdown. But as a result of that meltdown, now we're seeing payback come rolling around. They apparently sat on this idea of charging Ricky Vaughn for a joke, for a meme joke from 4 or 5 years ago. They sat on that, just biding their time, waiting for the payback. I bring this back up, and you may be wondering, well, why are you bringing it up again? I already listened to that show. Hopefully you did listen to that show. Don't need to hear that shit again. Well, because later on the same day, after recording the show, I read an article in RT, and no, I'm not posting up here. I don't have it even in front of me. I'm just rolling off the top of my head. So, you know, remember, remember back during that same time when Ricky Vaughn and so many of the rest of us were posting the dank memes on the meme front. We had the whole secret, now we know, secret FISA court warrant to spy on the Trump campaign and the Trump transition team, you know, because of the Pissgate there, the Steele dossier, which was paid for and produced by the Clinton campaign. And you know, the FBI basically tweaked the information and faked the evidence, got their secret FISA warrant so they could spy on the political opposition. Oh, yes, but Nixon was such a bad guy, wasn't he? Those were quaint times when we thought Nixon did something really, really bad. Now it's just... But anyway, we know all that. Most of you should know that by now. Well, anyway, I was reading this story. Out of all of that, if you can imagine, close your eyes for a minute, you know, and imagine that you go to the secret top FISA court with these supposedly strict protocols, fake some evidence so you can get an illegal warrant to spy on your political opposition. You'd think there would be some pretty serious fallout from that. Well, turns out one FBI guy got in legal trouble for that. Well, they sentenced the one FBI guy. One guy. Out of all the people involved in this obvious conspiracy, that's part of what they're throwing at the Ricky Vaughn, by the way, is it was a conspiracy. We have this vast, obvious conspiracy to lie to the FISA court, generate fake evidence so that they can get a secret warrant to spy on their political opposition. And one guy gets actually legally held accountable, if you can call it that. He was sentenced to 1 year of probation and a $100 fine. Yeah. A year of probation, $100 fine. By the way, Ricky Vaughn could be looking at 10 years in prison for memes from 5 years ago. The mask isn't only off. These assholes are just running around naked. I don't know. I don't know how else to put it. They're just running around naked now. Now, I'm going to merge some of this stuff together with the other big news this past week, which was the whole, the Wall Street Bets guys and the GameStop and these hedge funds losing billions of dollars, which was just absolutely hilarious. And I want to kind of tie some of all of this together, big picture stuff like I kind of like to do, you know, what it all means. You see, because now we no longer have a legitimate system. People have realized this system is corrupt. The government's corrupt. The courts are corrupt. The bureaucracy is utterly corrupt. The churches are all bought out and corrupt. Well, I say all, you know, I'm painting with a broad brush here, but bear with me. The elections are complete hoaxes now. The media is a hoax. Everything is a hoax. They're destroying the economy in the name of a virus that's a hoax. I mean, everything is a hoax. They hoaxed the election. They committed blatant election fraud in front of everybody on video camera, and it didn't matter. They just said it didn't happen. And now they're trying to put a guy in prison for 10 years for a joke from 5 years ago and saying that he, disenfranchised voters or something, stole people's votes. They're claiming he stole people's votes because of a meme. Meanwhile, they threw over this election, they threw vote observers, election of poll observers out, boarded up the windows and walked in with crates full of ballots, unsupervised. Just But we were told that there was absolutely no possible way that could be fraud. And because fraud's apparently impossible unless you're posting memes on Twitter. But reeling things back in here, big picture, everybody knows the system's utterly corrupt. Nobody believes in it anymore. Do you? How do you believe in it anymore? You know, do you think these elections are real? Do you think, we just got to get together. Let's get together. Let's recycle the idea of a third political party. We'll start a new political party. Then we'll vote harder and get elected and change it with the voting system. Do you believe that? Because I'm kind of sad if you do. This isn't the 1990s and supporting Ross Perot. I mean, you know, we're in current clown year. So everybody is just jaded, or another word for jaded is experienced now, and understands it's the entire system. If you get drug into the, do you think Ricky Vaughn's going to get a fair shake in court? The entire system is utterly from top to bottom, completely corrupt. So how does it all tie in? Well, here's the thing, like with the GameStop thing, people figure out once people, you remove any kind of morality, any kind of not morality, I suppose that's the wrong term. When you officially do away with the notion that people can work within the system and better their lives, we see these hedge funds, which are just leeches. They just leech off there. They're not producing anything. They're not, you know, gaining capital for a company so that they can expand and hire more workers, which was the selling point of even having a stock market in the first place back in the day. They aren't doing that. They're just leeching off the system. They're gaming it. They play this little game, and then they leech off billions and billions of dollars out of the economy. And they serve no actual purpose. They just enrich themselves. But once you remove the notion that people can simply work hard and play by the rules and work within the system and do better in their lives, once you throw all of that out the window and say, piss on you, we're going to rob you and shut your little meager job down in the name of the flu and destroy your livelihood. And by the way, if you make any kind of comment about it, we'll ban you off the internet, and you'll be lucky if we don't file criminal charges against you for something somehow. Once you remove all of that, then people figure out a way to game the system. It's like, okay, so that's the rules now. You see, even when there's no rules, that's the rules. When they sit there and say, well, we're just going to keep tweaking, and here are the rules now. We always win, you always lose. People, and there are tens of millions of people we're dealing with here, will figure out a way to, okay, take those rules and slide right through the cracks and stick it to you. See, it isn't just about, those guys, they're in a position to make a lot of money. That's not even the point. Not really. I mean, it may be the point for them. I don't know. But really, the point is finding a way to stick it to the system. Occupy Wall Street sitting out there chanting, oh, the 1%. Nobody cared about that. They didn't care about that. They damn sure care about going broke because they lost 20, you know, upwards of 20. I don't know. I think total is up around 70, all of it together. $1 billion running these little short scams. And they kvetch and whine about it. But at the end of the day, these people didn't do anything illegal. They're trying to invent something. They'll try to invent something illegal about it. They've already gone the shutdown route, tried to shut them down, keep them from being able to do that. But but all that does is, as they do that, it just adds more fuel to the illegitimacy. You see, they threw illegitimacy in here. They are the ones who stripped whatever sense of legitimacy away from the system. They did that. We didn't do that. Posting funny memes and using provocative language on the internet, we did not strip legitimacy. We goaded them a little bit. Granted, I will admit that back in the day, we goaded these people into that a little bit by being dank and funny and having a good time. But anyway, that's not allowed. Having a good time is not allowed. Anyway, so now they're left with what? They're left with ruling with fear. They don't have the consent, to rule people. I've said this for a long time, how important legitimacy is to any government. You know, I feel so often like I beat a dead horse with this when I bring these points up again and again, but it just so often bears repeating. You know, dictators have elections for a reason. You hear of some backwater country that's ruled by a dictator, which I would propose is preferable to our system. But anyway, and they'll hold an election and get 100% of the vote. And they say, oh, that's ridiculous. Why do they even do that? He's a dictator. Because the people need to feel as though they're agreeing to this deal. There is a real reason the dictators hold elections, even though everybody knows they're going to get 100% of the vote. You don't want to be the opposition in that case. Because the people have to buy into it. They have to buy into the system. They have to buy into the idea that, yes, this guy is a dictator. He holds absolute power. But I agree to this. I agree to be ruled by this guy. And it may not be a bad deal. Everything we're told is a hoax. You know, so we're told this guy's a horrible dictator and his people hate him. But do they? We don't know. The media literally makes things up whole cloth now. Now they don't just tweak the truth or omit things. Now they just make shit up. So we don't even know. Hell, some of these brutal dictators may be all right. I don't know. I have no idea of knowing. But the point is that the people have to believe that, yes, I agree to be ruled by this one single guy who holds absolute power. He has that absolute power because we as the people choose to let him have that absolute power. And on the flip side of that, any king or dictator, they say dictator, but it's essentially a monarchy by the old name. You know, they understand the importance of this. They understand that, you know, they're so far. Yes, you may have quote unquote absolute power as a dictator or a monarch. You may have absolute power, but there is limits to that. But you don't want to abuse that power because you, by extension of that, are abusing the people. And then when the people start thinking, you know, I really don't agree to any of this shit. You got to have the people as a whole having this sense of, you know, agreeing to be ruled by you. Now, I mean, there's always going to be malcontents who aren't happy no matter who's in there. And that's just human nature. You can't get around that. Nobody's going to be 100% happy with whatever job, you know, somebody's doing as far as running anything, whether it's country or a business or, you know, whatever the case may be. No, you're never going to have everybody. There's always going to be malcontents that aren't happy. But you can't. The point is you have to avoid that critical mass. To avoid that critical mass when the mentality of the people as a whole begins to shift to, I didn't agree to any of this shit. I didn't agree to being demanded that you have to wear double masks now. Of course, I don't do that. But the point is, a lot of people that do it, even in the back of their minds, in fact, they're probably more disgruntled. The mask wearers that know this is bullshit, but they do it because they feel like they have to, are the ones that are probably going to go, like the old term used to be, go postal on something like that. Those of us that just flaunt it, like I ain't wearing one or two or three or whatever the hell mask, you can piss off with that. We have a, you know, we're more of mental fortitude. We haven't agreed to any of this nonsense. But those that know it's bullshit and go along with it because they feel forced, those are the ones that someday the switch is going to flip, and you hear about them just going off. That's what you get. Once again, got to reel this back in. I'm getting off topic on the mask thing. None of us agreed to shutting down the economy. Just imagine if a year or so ago they would have come, hey, look, we've got a new test for this new strain of the flu, and everybody's going to test positive for it. The overall death numbers won't change for any other flu season, but we want to go ahead and shut down the economy. Y'all good with that? I mean, who the hell would have agreed to that? Everybody have been like, no, are you insane? We didn't agree to any of this. We didn't agree to the COVID lockdowns. We didn't agree to the election fraud. We don't agree with this notion that Joe Biden was the most important or most popular person that ever lived and got more votes than any person ever ran for president in the history of the nation. In the history of the nation, we didn't agree to internet censorship. We didn't agree to the First Amendment being abolished. We didn't agree to any of this shit. But we got it anyway. You see, we approach that critical mass when it's like, I didn't agree to any of this, and yet it's being crammed down my throat anyway. And it spreads. Most people won't talk about it. We sit here on this show. We're an outlet. We really are. I mean, we get accused of, you're radicalizing and inciting people. But if anything, if we can be accused of anything, honestly, we're a relief valve. Because people can sure have this all pent up, and they can tune into this show and go, oh, thank goodness, I'm not going crazy. I'm not the only one that sees this as all bullshit. No, you are not the only one. And I would even venture that probably close to, if not the majority of people in the country, know it's bullshit. They won't say it. You're not allowed to say it. because you can at least tune into this show and hear somebody say it. But the point is, everybody's thinking it. But you see, when you crack down like on Ricky Vaughn, they're sending a message that you better keep your mouth shut. See, they don't care that you know. They just care that you submit. They're sending a message. At the end of that story that Sven and I did, they said, we're sending a message. And that is exactly right. It's what they're doing. They're not going to go after, they can't go after all 70 plus million people that voted for Donald Trump, but they'll make a few high profile examples. Drag them through court. If Ricky Vaughn gets off on it, he'll be financially ruined just from paying for lawyers and bail and this and that and the other. And that's the whole point. I mean, even if the thing's a dud, but we live in a post-legal society, so who the hell knows? If we didn't, I mean, a judge would look at this case and probably have the prosecutors that brought it disbarred because it's so utterly, you know, ridiculous. Should actually throw the case out and award a monetary reward. They should say, I'm going to allow you to sue them for even bringing this case because it's so freaking retarded. But we live in clown world. We live in a post-legal society. So, probably going to get 10 years in maximum confinement for funny jokes because that's where we're at. But they're down to ruling by fear. That's the point. They drag somebody out, make an example of them. And they rule by fear. People get together and they come in and they sow dissension and you never know this person and that person. Who can I trust? And see, it spreads fear. They're left with ruling by fear because they don't have consent anymore. They don't know. They don't think they need it. They could just rule over you by fear if you don't keep your mouth shut. The reality is, I remember saying years ago, this all ends with somebody going in a camp. Them or us? Well, I hate to tell you, but the way things look right now, yeah, they're openly, yeah, I mean, what, we're going to get COVID camps, we're going to get political dissidents thrown into prison, I don't know, they're going to go around, I guess, and try to continue their wars around the world because the people on the other side of the planet are oppressed or something and don't have our freedoms. I'm not sure what even freedoms they're pretending we have anymore. Are we still pretending? You know, it's like, oh, you know, like you have a family member and everybody knows they're on drugs, but they pretend they don't know they're on drugs. You know, we're going to pretend we don't know he's a druggie. You know, we're just not going to mention that. Or we're going to just keep pretending that we have freedom here. Because be hard pressed to point out exactly what freedom that we have. They hate the truth. You damn sure don't have freedom of speech. That's gone. I mean, we can talk about the First Amendment and freedom of speech in the context of, you know, we should have a God. We have a God-given right to that. So, yeah, they can ban it all they want, but they don't really have the right to do that. And that's all well and good, but to pretend like the Constitution counts, what's the point? It's gone. I mean, the First Amendment is a nice little note on there, but they're putting a guy on trial for a joke from 5 years ago on a Twitter account he hasn't had in years. But here's the thing, and again, I'm trying to keep this more or less on a singular topic. It's hard to monologue and you're thinking about all of these things and to try to kind of keep it all wrapped up where it all fits in the box. You got 70 plus million people anyway that now know the system is utterly corrupt. You can't count on the courts. You can't count on the voting. You can't count on political parties. You got to, and I'm going to go on a tangent again. You got Ted Cruz now. You know, so all of a sudden now Ted Cruz is trying to be hardcore. You know, like he's holding the line. I just imagined all of the Republicans in high positions of power, senators, congresspeople, they all sat around and they drew straws. And if you drew the red straw, that means your role now is to play the hardcore guy. Because that's an attempt to reel you back into believing in the voting system. Ted Cruz, he's holding the line this time. He's holding the line. Look at him. He's hardcore. We got to just get out there and vote harder. We get more Ted Cruzes. Then we can change this. See, they're trying to, the house is burned down, but they're trying to convince you to go ahead and lay down on the floor of the charred remains and keep living there. I mean, it's not the best analogy, but you get it. I mean, I imagine they drew straws and it's like, who's playing the role of, you know, oh, you're the Republican conservative who's trying to hold the line against these crazy liberals in this shit show. Could have been anybody else. He just drew the straw this time. You just drew the straw, Ted. Your role is to go on TV and really say some hardcore things about these demon rats and their liberal socialist plans. The guy right next to him is like, "Whoo! Glad you drew that straw, Ted. I could just sit here and keep playing my usual role of fake opposition and reaching across the aisle to find compromise and give the communists whatever they want. Don't worry, though. We're all getting our checks cashed. We're all getting the checks. We'll all get to cash them. We get to keep dancing along with the theater." But you get 70 million plus people not buying into any of this bullshit anymore. And you got 70 million minds looking for ways that they could stick it to the man, as it were. Go back to boomer language from back in the day. Stick it to the man. You know, don't trust the man. You see, when people don't buy into the system, they'll find ways. They'll find ways that these people never dreamed they could find. These oligarchs, these people, these corrupt fools, they have no idea. They think they've got this, this system can never, we've got it now. The plebs can do nothing. Oh, yeah? Well, look, you woke up today and your precious hedge funds have lost $70 billion and are on the brink of going broke. Because some guys were like, "Hey, we can squeeze them. Look at this. And it's all legal. They can find a way." Stick it to a man. Stick it to the man. It's not to play your... It's like you have this assigned role of loser. And all it takes is getting the mindset of not wanting to do that. I don't want to play the role of loser. What can I do to play the role of winner here? Oh, look at here. Right here. Perfectly legal. I'd be able to be limited, be like, "Hey, we all need to just keep doing that." Oh, they'll tweak it around. They'll close that hole. The point is, what they don't realize is there's all of these countless weak spots they haven't even thought of. But 70 plus million looking around and thinking and discontented and totally tapped out of the system, they'll find it. You got a whole lot. It's like if you had you lost your car keys in a 1 acre field and you're looking all around and you can't find them. And you're like, "Well, this is hopeless. I'll never find my car keys in this 1 acre field. I know I dropped them in this field. I can't find them." Well, yeah, you might look out there all day long. You can't find anything. But if you get 500 people together and cram them into a 1 acre field and everybody looks down, somebody's going to find your car keys. It's like this. There's so many chinks in their system, they haven't even realized it. Chinks, as in, you know, I'm not being racist here against Chinese people. No, chinks in the armor. That was an attempt at humor. I'm trying to keep it light here. There are so many chinks in the armor of their system, because it is corrupt and stupid and built on lies, that you get 70 million people looking for weaknesses that they can exploit in the system. And they may not even be thinking of it in that context. They may just be thinking, "How can I cash in on this shit? How can I?" Because the whole idea that I could work hard, play by the rules, and make an honest living, that's all gone out the window. So how can I exploit the system? Because obviously these rich people exploit the system nonstop, and it's apparently that's the rules. You have 70 plus million people thinking, "Man, how can I work this system over and come out on it? How can I come out on top?" So many chinks in the armor they've never dreamed of. Be it financially, I mean, in this case, like with the GameStop thing, it was financially, but politically, there are all kinds of ways that people will find to not comply with their system, to not comply with their rules, that they can get away with. You see, nothing so blatant that they're going to come arrest you for it, but just, you know, things that by themselves, it's not even worth them messing with you over, but you get away with it. All of this snowballs along as I look down the road and try to read tea leaves. Where does it all mean? Because it all erodes trust in the system. You may say, "Well, it doesn't matter because they can do whatever they want." But it does matter. You see, just as one simple, and this is just a singular example, this all hinges on the dollar's status with the world. It really does. Oh, this whole shit show system, all of their power that you imagine they have, and they do wield power. I mean, I say you imagine that they have. I guess what I mean is that you imagine it's foolproof, that you imagine it's absolute. But it's actually very, very fragile because it all hinges on faith in the dollar. That's where their power comes from. Their power comes from money. Men with guns will come and jack your shit up on behalf of these people. You were right. Yes, that's power. But they come and do that because they're getting paid. when they, if they tell the men with guns, hey, this guy posted a joke 5 years ago, go round him up. And the men with guns are like, well, I ain't been paid in 3 weeks and you keep saying you're going to pay me. So you haven't, you know, I don't think I'm going to do that because I'm not getting paid out of this deal. It all hinges on the dollar. And as you can see, this continuing erosion, and it's inevitable. They can't stop it because of what they're doing as they try to clamp down and gain more and more power and absolute. And they're ruling by fear and they're trying to keep everybody intimidated. It erodes the trust in the system and it all will continue to erode. And at some point, all it takes is a few big, one or two big players in the world that hold a shit ton of U.S. currency. I say, well, how can they, have all of this money out there loaned out and this money is out there and we haven't had this inflation that everybody's been predicting for years? Because there's been this huge, huge global demand for the dollar because people see it as a safe haven. I can put, you know, my wealth in these dollars and not lose it. But if whether it's nations or billionaires or whatever the case may be, all it takes is some big players looking at the overall societal collapse that's unfolding and will continue to accelerate in the U.S. And then one day when one big, big player says, I don't think the dollar, say it doesn't have to be malevolent, like I'm going to bring down the U.S. Everybody would wake up one day and say, you know, I don't think the dollar is a safe place to store my wealth. I'm getting rid of it. I'm getting gold. I'm getting Chinese currency. I'm getting Bitcoin, and whatever the hell the case may be. They chunk that. They chunk the dollar. And then one big player, and then all the other players, because they're sheep too. They call us sheep, you know, the goyim or cattle, whatever the case may be. You know, the people are like livestock, you know, and they are too. You know, you got all these big rich people, but at the end of the day, if they see one cow break for the gate, all the other cattle chase them. I don't know if you've ever worked cows, but that's how, well, you get one wild cow. You got all this group of docile cows, and you're working them down the fence line. You see this shit on TV, like working cows is like, you know, they're out there, yeehaw, yeehaw, and they're roping cows. That's bullshit from Hollywood. That ain't the way you work cows. You know, in fact, nowadays the cattle are so docile, you basically go out there and shake some cow cubes or honk the horn, and they just come up there and get in the pen. You ain't even got to do shit. But sometimes you'll have to gather cattle because they're out in the brush. And you get out there, say, you get your boys together, and you get your horses saddled up, and you go out there. And what you do is you just kind of keep working. I mean, oh, there's another one over there. And you get a little group going, and you see one out there stray, and you go bring them in and everything. And you get them, usually you get them along fence line. The gate will be up there, and you're trying to get them into the trap. So you get them along the fence line. You just push them along. You just push them along the fence line. And everything's all good. And then you push them in, finally get them through the gate. But it takes a few minutes, you know, but you got them pushed in there and the cattle are going, but you got this one rank ass cow. And this one rank ass cow, she's looking for an excuse to break. And that cow breaks, boom, out the gate. And guess what? All the rest of them chase her. And start all over. People like that too. You see, one big player dumps his dollars. Because he decides, this isn't a safe place to store my wealth anymore. And all the rest of them are going, whoa, 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 whoa. Whoa, this cow's breaking for the gate. It's a trap. Let's get out of here. I don't want to be the one left holding useless dollars. So then they all start chasing. And then the dollars all get traded for something else. And the dollar's value starts plummeting. And with it, their ability to hold it together. What does that mean? Hopefully it means secession. When that happens, there is your cue to get serious about breaking this thing up and starting all over. This thing is, so is this, how's this system, you know, how do I put it? This system is like a house infested with termites. You know, decades and decades ago, yeah, the termites were there. And if people, and there were people pointing out, hey, you got termites. They could have gone in and fogged. They could have gone in and fogged the termites out, you know, and cleaned it up and repaired the damage, but everybody chose to ignore that. We're at the point now that the house is condemned. I mean, the house has been so ate up by corruption and termites that the house is ready to collapse in on itself. I mean, you're left to the house burning down and you build a new house. That's where this system is. It's not going to save this thing. I don't think it's salvageable. That's my opinion. I'm probably not legally allowed to say that somewhere, somehow, but that's my opinion. This thing isn't salvageable. It's going to burn down. It's going to burn down all on its own. It's inevitable. If it doesn't, it collapses on itself. If you just left a house indefinitely, ate up with termites and corruption, eventually the support beams get so corrupted, ate up, that it all just falls in on itself. It just implodes on its own because it can't stand it. The corruption ate completely through everything that was supporting it and holding it up. Then you rebuild. That's where we're at. And I think that rebuilding is secession, because so much of this country doesn't have anything in common with the other. You know, there's no point in trying to hold it all together. You see people, I'm not giving up anything. Well, it doesn't matter what the hell you want. This is what you're going to get. I'm not giving up it. But what do you have in common? So many people from different regions of this nation, you know, they don't have anything in common with other people from those areas. They really don't. I mean, the U.S. has forever basically been entirely different countries globbed together. You know, they'll say Texas is a part of the South, but it's not the antebellum South. I mean, you know, Texas, yeah, there are some shared values, I guess, you know, family values, if you would. But at the end of the day, Texas has a completely different culture and way of life than somebody than say Mississippi, Alabama. You take Mississippi, Alabama, and to an extent, Louisiana. You know, that's a whole different culture from Texas. It's like a whole different country. But we're all globbed together in this now current shit show that we have. I warned on one of the previous shows, I could look back through here and find which one. Hell, it may have been last year. I don't know. But I warned against, we talked about not getting this loser mentality. Like, oh, just resign yourself that the enemy always wins. The evil always wins. Don't get that mentality. This idea, yes, they're obvious. I don't know what other conclusion come to, except that they're purposely destroying the economy. I'm assuming to put in place their global, you know, their great reset weirdo plan. I don't necessarily think they could sell it. I guess they think they can cram it down everybody's throat if they make things bad enough. People clamor for anything if they make it bad enough. But you can't get this sense of inevitability. They don't always win. Their hedge funds lost upwards of $70 billion because of something they didn't think about. That's one little thing. This idea that they're going to eventually get their way and get their one world global government and we'll all live, you know, with their stamp on us, their 666 mark on us or whatever the hell. Yeah, I don't, you can't let yourself get sunk into that mentality. Don't give them more credit than what they deserve. There's nothing that says it's inevitable. We're getting their global reset. We can fight it, but it's powerless. We can't win. Well, you can't win with that attitude. You just, what do? What I said at the top of the show, you keep things moving. There's only certain things you can do in your life, and you keep doing those things. You know, make sure you got people in your life that you can count on, and that means they have to be able to count on you. That's the flip side. Nobody ever seems to lie. Man, nobody wants to help me. Well, have you ever helped anybody yourself? No. Piss on that. They can help me. Yeah, I mean, if you want to be somebody that people, you know, if you want to have people in your life that you can count on, you've got to be a person that other people can count on. You know, you can't be the guy that's always wanting something and you are never willing to, you know, give, never willing to help someone else out. Need to have people in your life. You got to keep moving things forward in your own life. But this idea that it's inevitable, I think it's a very fragile plan. I talked about how their little system that they have, they think is so bulletproof, but it's actually very fragile. It's a very fragile system, and you get 70+ million people looking for little chinks, little things that they can exploit, get away with, maybe even profit from. That's all the better. The rules they can flaunt that aren't serious enough for them to come after you, but if you get 70 million people flaunting the rules, all of their different little rules, you've got to do this, and everybody starts flaunting them. 70 million people are flaunting these rules, and you can't go after all 70 million of them, and even if you pick a few out, the rules are so piddly that it's just, it's a waste of time, and you bleed them of resources. It becomes, I say this, it becomes a death of 1,000 paper cuts. And you know, you're inciting this. No, you're doing it to yourselves. The system's been corrupt for a long time, but the people that were, you know, running it back in the day, you know, they understood the dangers of what you're doing now, what these people are doing now. I should say, I doubt that they're tuned in, listening, anxious ear. I don't know, maybe they are. What kind of evil is he plotting? What kind of righteousness is he plotting to thwart our evil? They probably don't even delude themselves that they're not evil. But no, they're their plans are fragile. Their plans are very fragile. You get 70 million people flaunting their rules because of what they've done. The people back before that were running this corrupt shit show, they understood the dangers of what they're doing now. And it's like, nah, yeah, we can do a little voter fraud here if we need to nudge the numbers. We can't get too blatant about it because, you know, if the people check out the system, this whole game grinds to a halt. We need the system to keep working. I don't think the people running things now are nearly as smart as the people that used to run things. It was always corrupt, but the people running it back in the day were more clever about it. These people now are just kind of stupid, honestly, in the way they're playing this out. But anyway, yeah. So I guess don't be discouraged, I guess, on that note. I don't know. Anyway, there's the information. I don't know what you can do with it, but there it is. You know, that's what we go for. We got to wrap up the regular part of the show and get into our Christian specific message this week. As always, I'm looking at the clock. Be hard pressed not to run a little long. That's what I do. But yeah, we're going to wrap up the regular part of the show, get into the Christian specific message. If that's not your cup of tea, well, I am glad you joined us either way. A lot of people write and contact and say, hey, you know, not a Christian believer, but I love the show. Even love the Christian specific segment. And that's all good. You're welcome to listen in and attend. You may learn something, you may get something out of it. You may not. Don't know. Don't care, really, honestly. But let's get in here either way. Fill those pews. You know what it is. It's time for a Christian specific message here at our humble little parish. So as you get settled in here, I mean, I always try to sit down here and we try to find a way to kind of, I like to tie the Christian specific message into what we talk about earlier in the show. Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't, to be honest. But I do always hope that, you know, we can find something that really, after we're done, you can go, wow, I understand how that makes sense. And, you know, applying it to my own life and the world around me. And of course we do. We live in tumultuous times. We live in a time of judgment, and people will sit here and be like, this is the last judgment. And it may or may not be. But a lot of this stuff, there's patterns for it. This isn't necessarily anything new. It's new to you. It's new to me because our personal historical experience is, by definition, our own lifetimes, what we've experienced in our life. You know, and sadly, a lot of people's sense of history at all is simply their own lifetimes. If it hasn't happened in their lifetime, then it can never happen. It's because it's never happened before, but it has happened before. These things are cyclical. Now, I do think what we're seeing as far as like being on this scale, this grand, like global scale, is something new. But as far as the things we are seeing take place, a lot of it is just the same old shit we've seen all throughout history, these cycles that come about. So as you might guess, with that in mind, we're going to be rocking things Old Testament this week and talk about how it is that we have God will put us in a position, because we talk about God delivering us, and we've already said time and time again, you got to keep moving forward, you have to do your part. And I always emphasize this because the false message from the heretical modern church so often is faith in God and trusting in God means you don't do anything. It means you sit there and maybe say some prayers and, you know, you just wait for God to come and fix everything for you. Now, granted, you have to accept that there are only certain things you can do. You can't just, you know, take up and handle these issues yourself because you don't have that kind of power. That's where you have to trust in God. But at the same time, you have to do the things you can do. You have to affect the things you can affect. I can sit here, for instance, and I'm not trying to brag on myself. Please don't interpret it that way. But this is just the best illustration I can come up with. This show is very humble. You know, I love y'all. I love this cozy parish that we have. But I don't have the audience that a Rush Limbaugh has. But I do have an audience. We do have a congregation here. I could sit here and talk about my Christian faith at home by myself and pray to God that he does something and not do anything. But I don't do that. I do this show. We have this congregation. We try to share a message and look at the truth and congregate, even though it's online. We try to congregate and kind of, I don't know, shore each other up, you know? You know, we try to strengthen each other's faith. This isn't just me doing, y'all give that back. And we try to do this thing. Is it going to change the world? No, absolutely not. I don't have any kind of delusions of grandeur such as that. But it is what I can do. It is this thing that I can do. And the rest of it that I can't do, that I don't have any power to do, I leave that to the Lord. And that applies to every single body. Every one of you listening, if you are a believer in the Lord, that is how it should work for you. Do what you can. No, it's not going to change the world, but because it's not going to change the world doesn't mean you sit on your ass and don't do anything. Wait for God to come and fix it for you. That is not how it works. We are illustrated. We have this word. Yes, I'm waving my Bible around. You can't see that. Doesn't that make sense? I wave it around. This isn't on video. We have the Word of God. We have these illustrations time and again. And so often God will set us into a situation where his deliverance is going to come. But he's going to do it in a way where you can't take credit for it. And there's a reason for that. Now, we're going to rock Old Testament here this week. And we're going to talk about Gideon. And of course, you probably are fairly familiar with the story of Gideon. But are you familiar with how it kind of gets started? You know, we're going to cover the story that most people probably already know. But before that, we're going to back up a little bit and kind of just get a brief background. And I'm having to do this. You can read the whole thing yourself. I can't sit here and just read the whole thing. You would all go to sleep. I have to try to hit the high points. It's not that I'm trying to skip out important stuff. It's just one thing you learn when you do things on air, do a show like this, is when you start reading something, it's a news article, the Bible, it doesn't matter. Once you just sit here and start reading something, the amount of time that people tune in to that or start soaking in the information shrinks exponentially. It really does. It shrinks. You sit here and just read. Pretty soon people tune it out. So with that in mind, I have to kind of hit the high points here to get to the message that we want to get to today. We're going to do some background on talking about Gideon, because as well as, you know, quickly cover the story that most of you are probably familiar with and understanding how this applies. If you were hoping for God, you know, we're hoping for God to deliver us out of these evil times, and understanding where this comes from and how God sets us in a position where you can't take glory for it. And what leads up to it. So we look at Judges chapter 6. We're just going to do verse 1. And what does it say? This is a familiar line. This is probably one of the most lines that's used over and over again. One of the most used lines in the Old Testament. And that is, "And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them into the hands of Midian 7 years. It always comes back to the people doing evil. Don't you love how people, you got these people, and they bitch about this horrible system that we have, and they get it and they don't like it, and how did it come to this? But they'll claim to be a Christian believer, but they never want to accept the evil that the people have done in the eyes of the Lord. So many people, I said this before, so many people that talk about praying for America, God bless America, they're really just praying that their perception, their cushy lifestyle will continue. They never pray that the nation will turn against, you know, that the people will turn away from their evil ways, from their wicked ways. Or they might pray that somebody else turns away from their evil. That's human nature, isn't it? If you want to pray about somebody else's evil ways, oh, you know, you just, the evil ways, that person. I think that if people love to point out the sins of other people, you know. Now, those people need to turn away from their evil ways. No, you need to turn away from your evil ways. Take homosexuals. Yeah, it's easier to pick on the queers, you know. And everybody wants to pick on the queers. You know, and it's like, it's in the Bible here. Homosexuality is a sin, and it's an abomination in the eyes of the Lord. And that's true. It is. It's true. It is. It's right here in the scripture. Gluttony is also a sin in the eyes of the Lord. How many gluttonous people sit around in church mumbling about the queers? Yeah, but, you know, you don't have any effect on them and what they choose to do, but look at your fat ass. You know, gluttony is a sin, too. You might want to handle that shit. Oh my goodness. And everybody, it's easy to talk about other people's sins. And yeah, these other people need to turn away from the evil, but you can't control what other people do. So you better try to examine the evil you got in your life and try to get a rein on that shit. Because that's what you have control over. The people did evil in the eyes of the Lord. And I would propose to you that this nation that we live in right here today has done a whole hell of a lot of evil in the eyes of the Lord. In fact, I would venture to guess that the cup of God's wrath is just about to spill over on this thing. And well deserved so. You point these things out and people get mad. You know, I mean, we're the parish of the patriots, but these quote unquote patriots that want you to blindly love America, no matter how much evil shit it does, you know, they'll get all rustled. How dare you touch it? I love America. And you worship that flag, don't you? Just like your God. If the Q thing was like a religion, wasn't it? People, I don't believe in your God BS. You know, your was a sky fairy or what? I don't know what kind of this is supposed to be zingy atheist terms to deride our beliefs. But I believe in Q. The storm is coming any day. If the Q thing had been real, and if Trump had been, and you know, suddenly, you know, drained the swamp, and it would have been great, I guess, but who would have got the glory for that? Trump. Everybody had been like, see, Q was real, Trump was real, everything happened just according, you know, to plan, you know, and they would have given the glory to Trump. Now, I'm not picking on Trump. I'm not saying it was wrong to hope that Trump would manage to maybe turn some of this around. A lot of us were hoping for that. But God will set things up, especially when things have gone so far. And it's gone far in this, this clown show we live in. That he will set things up to where you can't give a man credit. He'll let things get so bad that if and when, you know, when you're delivered from them, you can't do anything but glorify God, because that's the only way it could have come about. Now, he will use men to do this. We're going to see this as we move forward in what we talk about. But God will set things up where you're not going to glorify. You're not going to take credit. Look, we, as all a part of the Q movement, we stopped. We drained the swamp. We stopped their evil plans. And now everything's good again, happily ever after. Where does God get glory in that? He doesn't. But understand, these things start with the people did evil in the eyes of the Lord. Now, you may say, well, the people didn't have anything to do with setting up, you know, the corrupt system. But the people themselves have become corrupt. And, you know, not just now, today, like, oh, over the past 5 years, for generations, little by little, the people became more and more corrupt. You could look back and see it and understand it if you have an eye to see and an ear to hear. It's right there. Each generation cared a little less about what was come next, about those who came after them, about what they were doing. They cared a little less and a little less. It was all became more and more about, well, what can I get right now? How can I fill my own selfish desires? More wicked, more corrupt than they do, more evil in the eyes of the Lord. We didn't just wake up one day and have people being prosecuted for a joke from 5 years ago, while somebody who lies to a court to get a fraudulent warrant spy on, you know, a scandalous spying operation on the political opposition walks with a year's probation. We didn't just get there overnight. The injustice is built up to that point, but it's just that when it was happening then, no one gave a shit. It didn't affect them personally. People have incorporated all kinds of evil into their lives in the name of tolerance. They're tolerant. They've accepted evil in every way, shape, or form. Oh, they've been willing to point out other people's faults and sins, but not to work on their own, because that requires effort. It's easy to sit there and point the finger at somebody else. Look at him. He, that person's evil. That person's doing sin in the eyes of God. Well, yeah. What are you going to do to stop it? Well, I can't, but I can talk about it. It makes me feel better about myself. Well, what kind of sin are you committing in your life? Well, what's not right with you? Well, let's not get into that. We don't have time to talk about that. We got to wrap that up. Let's continue. We're continuing with like the prologue. We're going to continue with the backlog before, you know, the prologue. You know, what happens before, you know, God brings about the story of Gideon and brings about what he plans to do, the deliverance for the people that we're all pretty much familiar with. Well, we're going to stay in chapter 6 of Judges. Skip forward to verse 27. Then Gideon, because of course they had, you know, they're all bitching and complaining because they're being oppressed and all this has happened, but they're still setting up all of their altars to Baal and basically demon worship. And if you understand what the altars of Baal involved, is quite disgusting. So yeah, 27, then Gideon took 10 men of his servants and did as the Lord had said unto him. And so it was, because he feared his father's household and the men of the city, that he could not do it by day, that he did it by night. See, sometimes when you're doing the work of the Lord, you're going to have to be sneaky about that. I mean, you got to be smart. You got to be smart. You got to be smart. You got to be sneaky about doing the work of the Lord. You set out, well, how can I do this? Because if I just walk out in the daytime and try to do what God has commanded me, then, I'm going to get strung up here. So he did it by night. Slipped in. Did it by night. And when the men of the city arose early in the morning, behold, the altar of Baal was cast down, and the grove was cut down that was by it, and the second bullock was offered upon the altar that was built. And they said one to another, who hath done this thing? And when they inquired and asked, they said, Gideon, the son of Joash, hath done this thing. So somebody snitched him out. Amazing. Imagine that. Somebody snitched him out and said, hey, we know who it was. Gideon done cast down the altar of Baal. You see, to get rid of that thing. This has to take place before the next thing can happen. But everybody got mad at him. Nobody said, well, if he cast down the altar of Baal, we're going to wind up getting delivered out of this oppression that we're living under, this constant fear that we're living. No, they're mad. They wanted to keep that altar of Baal up there. See, all these people want to keep that old, they want to keep the parts of the old corrupt system that benefited them or that they perceive benefited them. These people weren't benefiting from Baal's altar there, but in their mind they were. They had incorporated that evil into their lives. So they just thought they couldn't live without it. It never occurred to them, well, it hadn't done us any good so far. See, you got to get rid of that first. You got to be stripped of that first. Now, Gideon come in here and tore their shit down in the middle of the night. And they weren't happy. They weren't like, wow, thanks, Gideon. Now we can move forward in our lives. Nah, they're mad. Quite upset about it. So somebody snitches them out. Then the men of the city said unto Joash, bring out thy son that he may die. So yeah, they were mad. Bring him out. Drag him out here. We're going to kill him. Because he hath cast down the altar of Baal, and because he hath cut down the grove that was by it. See, upset the apple cart. The fact of the matter is, for God to deliver the people, you got to get rid of the evil first. People are going to have to get rid of that first. But they didn't appreciate it. They didn't say, wow, thanks, Gideon. You did this great thing for us. We really appreciate it. No, they won't drag him out and kill him. That's, you know, wasn't doing it for some kind of praise. Wasn't going to bring him some kind of popularity contest. But the people had to get rid of their evil. And Joash said unto all that stood against him, will ye plead for Baal? Will ye save him? He that will plead for him, let him be put to death while it is yet morning. For if he be a god, let him plead for himself, because one hath cast down his altar. So yeah, Gideon's dad stood up and was like, well, you know, if Baal's so upset about him, let him come take care of this. He's pointing out that y'all are chasing after a falsehood. And at the end, that's why they were upset. At the end of the day, they knew it was a falsehood. They're riled up. We're going to drag him out. They're going to take their frustration out on Gideon. They're going to make him pay. The reason we're in this situation isn't because we've done evil in the sight of the Lord. It's because this guy came along and tore down this worthless altar where all this wickedness is centered around, this evil worshiping of Baal. But they got called out on it at the end of the day. They went along their way. They didn't get their will because God had a greater thing. But you see, that had to be tore down first. You have first people doing this evil in the eyes of the Lord. Now God has to tear down their altar so he can do the next thing. And he didn't tear down the altar, by the way, with them willingly do it. They didn't jump up. It'd been nice if they would have, but they didn't. They refused to tear it down. They absolutely refused to tear it down. So God came in and tore it down for them through Gideon, and that upset them. That upset them, but that was necessary for God to do the next thing, for God to demonstrate his power in delivering the people. Now, let's go ahead and get into that. We'll get into the story that most of you are probably fairly familiar with. We move forward to Judges 7. Let's start with verses 2 through 7. So you have this mighty army that just vastly outnumbered army has marched out against Israel. And by the way, if you're not tall enough for the ride to understand that this is not the Israel modern nation state, I don't know. I can't help you with that. So, this mighty army has marched out against Israel, and they're trying to rally their guys, you know, to oppose them. And they got some guys rallied, but it's dwarfed in comparison to this vast, vast army that is arrayed against them. So they're already outnumbered. It looks like an unwinnable situation. And no doubt the people are sitting there going, there's no way. I mean, there's just the numbers don't add up. There's no way we can be victorious. Somebody should stand up and say, God will make our men, we are mighty. They will give strength to our army of 10,000 or so guys against this multitude army that outnumbers us multiple times over. That's not what happens. And the Lord said unto Gideon, the people, I love this, the people that are with thee are too many. You got too many. Imagine being outnumbered, I don't know, 100, 1,000 times to one. And the Lord actually speaks to you and says, you got too many guys. You'll be like, what? What? How come I don't hear anything from the Lord? Because you would just be so shocked if you did, you couldn't accept it. Wait, what? You got too many guys. We're already outnumbered. The people that are with thee are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hands, lest Israel vaunt themselves against me, saying, mine own hand hath saved me. This is important. This is important to understand. If you're really, really down because Trump didn't drain the swamp and the Q thing didn't pan out. But think about it, lest Israel vaunt themselves against me. Because when you go glorifying it where you shouldn't, then it's against God. If God delivered you, but you say, well, thank goodness for Trump. Yeah, I praise God for Trump. Trump done drained that swamp. Q was right all along. The Q, the white hats delivered us. Oh, and thank God for that. You know, God gets like maybe a footnote. God don't take no damn footnote. So, that they might be tempted to say, mine own hand hath saved me. Now therefore go to proclaim in the ears of the people, saying, whosoever is fearful and afraid, let him return and depart early from Mount Gilead. And there returned of the people 22,000, and there remained 10,000. So they started, I guess, with roughly about 32,000 guys. They were still vastly, vastly outnumbered. And now most of them gone home. Close to like, yeah, over two-thirds now left. Left with 10,000 guys. Now they're really, really outnumbered. You got to imagine it, like if you were one of the 10,000 that went ahead and stayed behind, those guys were probably still thinking in the back of their mind, this guy's out of his mind. We got too many. We were already outnumbered, I don't know, 1,000 to 1. Now we're two-thirds just up and left. And it, whatever, I guess we're in this, this will be a grand adventure. But they had to be thinking this wasn't going to turn out well. Let's keep rocking here. And the Lord wasn't done. And the Lord said unto Gideon, the people are yet too many. Too many. We done culled two-thirds. You started off vastly outnumbered. We done culled two-thirds out, and God comes back around and says, you got too many. Y'all still invent a way to take credit from it and not give credit to me. Y'all invent a way. You'll say, these 10,000 were just so hardcore, man. We're going to make movies about why they didn't have movies. But you know, we're going to give all the glory. We these guys are heroes. We'll build statues to them. And the Lord said unto Gideon, the people are yet too many. Bring them down under the water, and I will try them there. I will try them for thee there. And it shall be that of whom I say unto thee, this shall go with thee, and same shall go with thee. And of whomsoever I say unto thee, these shall not go with thee, the same shall not go. So we brought down the people unto the water, and the Lord said unto Gideon, every one that lappeth of the water with his tongue, as a dog lappeth, him shall not
him shalt thou set by himself. Likewise, every one that boweth down upon his knees to drink. And the number of them that lappeth, putting their hand to their mouth, were 300 men. But all the rest of the people bowed down upon their knees to drink water. And the Lord said unto Gideon, by the 300 men that lapped will I save you, and deliver the Midianites into thine hand, and let all the other go, every man unto his place. And God didn't have a resentment, by the way, towards the ones he separated out. This was just his way of culling it down to a number that was so ridiculously small, to where the odds were so absurdly against them that there would be absolutely no way. Because God knew they'd try to take credit for themselves. They had a hard heart. They wouldn't tear down their altars. They wouldn't do any of the things. They wouldn't heed any of the warnings. So God's still going to take mercy and deliver them, but he's got to do it in a way, because he knows if they absolutely can, they'll find a way to take credit for it. But it wasn't that, you know, the way they people drank the water was somehow foul in God's eyes. This was just his way of culling it down. So now you're down. They had over 30,000 guys. They were vastly outnumbered. Vastly outnumbered. There we go. Two-thirds left. Now they're really, really outnumbered. Now he's down to 300 guys. Now it's so absurd. What were those guys thinking? They had to be thinking, man, this is just absolutely, absolutely crazy. Let's skip forward. We'll do verses 16 and kind of wrap up the scripture reading for this week. And he divided the 300. So now he had the 300. Now he's dividing them up. They're going to take part, but we're going to split our forces. We're going to split our forces yet again. And he divided the 300 into three companies, and he put a trumpet in every man's hand with empty pitchers and lamps within the pitchers. And he said unto them, look on me and do likewise. And behold, when I come to the outside of the camp, it shall be that as I do, so shall ye do. When I blow with a trumpet, I and all that are with me, then blow ye the trumpets also on every side of the camp, and say, the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. So Gideon and the 100 men that were with him came unto the outside of the camp in the beginning of the middle watch, and they had but newly set the watch, and they blew the trumpets and brake the pitchers and were in their hands. And the three companies blew the trumpets and brake the pitchers and held the lamps in their left hands and the trumpets in their right hands to blow withal. And they cried, the sword of the Lord and Gideon. And they stood every man in his place round about the camp, and all the host ran and cried and fled. And the 300 blew the trumpets, and the Lord set every man's sword against his fellow, even through all the host. And the host fled to some places I can't pronounce properly, but that gets to the point. So they didn't even really have to fight. You see, they raised a ruckus. The camp had all these vast number of people in it, this vast army from all these different nations. It was a diverse, this vast army that it was arrayed against them. It had a real weakness, and it was very diverse. It came from all of these different lands, these different tribes, these different people. And there was already a sense of paranoia in the camp, and there was some discontent, no doubt, going on. So you had these 300 guys, they spread out around about this camp, and they did this thing, and confusion fled, and in the confusion spread. And in the frenzy, the vast army turned on each other and started slaying each other with their. So they were so crazy, they all went so crazy, and hysteria went through the camp, spread through their vast camp to the point that they fled. And while they were fleeing, they started killing each other. There was so much confusion. There, they see a guy running towards them, swinging a sword. They didn't even register with him. Hey, wait, he's supposed to be one of my guys. And he kills him. And then somebody sees him strike down one of his own guys. And they're like, hey, what's going on? And so he goes and kills him. And this chaos flies through. You see, the vast army looked so strong, but it was fragile. It was fragile. It just took a little bit of chaos being introduced to their system, to their vast army, for it all to break apart, and they turned their swords on each other because it was so fragile. They weren't really of one mind. They were drug out there. They were all from these different groups, and they weren't really sure, but they, yeah, okay, we're going to go march against these guys, I guess. But when the chaos was introduced, they didn't have to really, Gideon's guys didn't really have to do anything.
Aside from that, he just had to have faith and do what God told him to do. But the chaos went through the camp. They all wound up fleeing in chaos, killing each other. Now, this still required Gideon to do what he was supposed to do. He made sure, this is what you want me to do, right, Lord? But if Gideon would have heard of originally the Lord said, well, I'm going to deliver the people from this threat. And Gideon would have been like, oh, cool. Thanks, God. I'm going home now. that's not how it works. Gideon had to do what he was supposed to do. He had to carry out his role. The deliverance didn't come from Gideon. The deliverance obviously came from the Lord. Gideon didn't come up, with let's cull my troops down to a few hundred guys. Let's cull it down to 300 guys. That'll be great. No strategist in the world would do that. But God did. That way the glory and the credit would be to God. And again, this started, but before that happened, they had to tear down the altars to Baal, the things they worshiped, the evil they were chasing after. They had to get that evil out of their lives first, to cull that out first. And when somebody comes in and culls it out for them, they really get upset. They really get mad. They want to kill Gideon. How dare you cull the evil out of life? But that had to happen for the deliverance to happen. Now, when the deliverance happened, I'm sure they were thrilled. But they weren't thrilled when the evil got cut out. They wanted to hold on to that. They were comfy with that. They were cozy. It didn't matter that Baal wasn't doing a damn thing for them. But they wanted to hold on to that familiarity. Ultimately, when you have faith in the Lord, if the Lord is going to deliver you, it is to his glory. And I guess we'll bring this up, and what brought this to mind, and I'm looking at the clock and we're really running late. Got to start these segments earlier. I just really need to. But over the past months, year even, I've seen so many people online, especially, and they talk about, they profess to be Christians and they want God to deliver them, but they really wanted Trump or they wanted Q or they wanted somebody else to deliver them. They wanted to create the situation and they say, yeah, God did that. Thank you, Trump, God Emperor. They wanted to, they really didn't believe that God, the Lord, could or would deliver them. They wanted to create a way for God to deliver them. They wanted to, but that's not faith. They wanted to invent this way that God was going to deliver them, that the Lord would deliver them, just like Gideon. They did just, we just invent a way for the Lord to deliver them. They didn't really have faith that the Lord would deliver them. And heaven forbid if you suggest that they tear down the altars in their own life first. The people weren't willing to do that then, and they're not willing to do that now. And yet they look around at this disaster, this calamity that has befallen the nation around them in their own personal world. I've always found this story amazing to me. Because again, just from the perspective of the guys, you're in the 300 guys. You can't be sitting there. You've got to be thinking, some of them had to be thinking this is an absolute suicide mission. But at the end of the day, it must have been an amazing thing to know that literally the Lord had brought this victory about. They see this man, they were just standing there blowing trumpets, waving lamps around and busted some pitchers. And they're looking at the chaos and these people are killing each other for them. They don't just sit there like, well, I was going to pull my sword out, but I guess I'm good now. There's no way Gideon could have just thought, this is what we're going to do. I have this plan. No, he was just going along with this. And at the end of the day, God brought this about. The Lord brought this about. It wasn't the machinations of men. Nobody could sit there and say, well, we did it. Probably somebody did. But by and large, the people couldn't do that. They had to know that the victory, the deliverance came from the Lord. Interestingly enough, cyclically, as you go further along through the Old Testament, guess what the people did? They just went right back to their old shitty ways. And it starts all over again. Like I say, a lot of this seems new, and the scale of it is by for sure pretty new. We're talking a global scale of corruption and evil here. But at the end, the patterns are more or less the same. So if the patterns are more or less the same and you as a Christian believer, where does that leave you with your faith? Should you be all downhearted because Q didn't ride to the rescue, or did that altar need to be torn down? perhaps the Lord is going to provide a way that you can't deny is by the hand of the Lord. What can you do? You can't force other people to get their crap together, but you can get yours together. You can turn your heart to the Lord. You can tear down any altars you have in your heart and try your best to be a part of the 300. We have absolutely got to wrap up on that note because we've gone like retarded long this week. I hope you got something out of it. It's always my hope that you get something out of it. And, our Christian specific men, don't get downhearted. I mean, yes, this is discouraging. Look, I get black pills as anybody, believe me. This is just don't know some days. Like, what are we even doing here? But at the end of the day, I sit down and continue to do the show. I do what I can do, and that applies for you too. Get up every day, keep the wheels moving, keep the gears turning, and keep going forward with your life and do what you can do. Big, small, doesn't matter. Those guys didn't think it was a big deal when they went down, drank at the water. They know God was doing something. The Lord was doing something here. Go down, drink the water. They thought they were just going to get a drink. But they did what they were told. They did what they were supposed to. They went down and got a drink. They had no idea that this was God doing something, but they took the action. They went down and got a drink of water. Keep the gears moving. Keep moving forward. Keep doing what you're supposed to do in your life. Keeping an eye, trying to figure out and get closer to the Lord, and the Lord will do his thing. You have to put your faith in God. You have to put your faith in the Lord and in his deliverance. Got to wrap up on that note. Like I say, I've got a ridiculously long this week. I apologize to the network for messing up the schedule like I always do. It's an empty apology because I keep doing it. We're going to wrap up on that note. Thank you again for those of you. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. Again, the information is at the bottom of the description page. It is much appreciated. We'll see you again next week right here for the Parish of the Patriots.